Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life for IBD patients. You can get more information at 1-800-492-5538. And for the couple of minutes, we have Eric Boulder from Media Matters. Eric, just to conclude, just take one call you can answer, and then we'll let you run out of here, okay?
Fair enough.
410-319-8888 is the number, and Rashid, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening.
Hi, Rashid.
How you doing, sir?
Well.
I just want to call in reference to the gentleman was talking the history of Malcolm X and how he explained to the people that Malcolm was teaching hate the white man was the devil and all these type of words that he had mentioned. After he did his world tour, he came back and changed.
I don't mean to cut you off because you've been holding a long time. No, we weren't playing that clip to kind of talk about Malcolm in that sense. It was playing the clip to show how Fox News was trying to show that Henry Louis Gates was a racist, and playing the whole kind of racist world up around Fox. That's why we were playing the clip to show the kind of disinformation that comes out of Fox News and Media Matters was portraying in their report. Yeah, so I completely agree. I mean, I was one of those young men back there in the 60s lined up in Harlem to pay my respects to Malcolm. He was blown away, so we would not do that on other shows. I mean, please. No.
Thank you.
I wouldn't do that, Reggie.
So, Eric, before we lose you, I do want to ask you. I was watching over the last couple of days, Accuracy in Media had a conference in Washington. And they had several panels, panel after panel after panel after panel, going after this White House, going after major media, mainstream media, as they call it, bias, on and on.
Yeah.
Not one time did Accuracy in Media challenge a report from Fox News.
Right.
I found it fascinating. They attacked reporting by Katie Couric, by NBC. I mean, NPR. But not one time did they say, oh, well, by the way, Fox did get this report wrong.
Well, it's also interesting in that if you listen to the mainstream press, and particularly the right wing, they claim to be completely upset and angered that the White House is criticizing Fox. They're portraying the White House's very public and transparent critique of Fox News as some sort of attack on the free press and this enemies list. And it's interesting to hear conservatives make that claim, since press bashing has been a cornerstone of their movement for four decades in America. But suddenly, it's these habitual press bashers at Accuracy in Media who are standing up and saying, politicians can't have an opinion about political coverage. So, I mean, the hypocrisy is layered on many, many times. Your point is a good one. They never take issue with Fox News. And these people that bash the press for a living are now running out in defense of Fox News and saying, whoa, no one can critique the press. That's anti-free speech. That's intimidation. So the whole thing is sort of this bizarre world upside down.
Eric Boulder, it's always a pleasure to have you on the air. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
Soon, I hope. Take care. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're talking about a number of things, and one of the questions about whether Fox News has a racist slant to its news. I'd like to hear what you think. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com or log on to the Facebook page, Mark Steiner, and throw your comments there, or call us at 410-319-8888, and how this plays into the dialogue in America. You know, there's an interesting aside that ESPN, they suspended Bob Greasy. You know about that, right? Bob, the sports announcer, because they're talking about racism on the air. Bob Greasy was suspended for 1 week because as a NASCAR driver, I don't know if you watch NASCAR. You don't watch cars?
I don't.
You don't?
It's okay. Something about going around and around.
You don't
get it.
You don't watch
but
it?
But that's all right.
But one of the drivers is Juan Pablo Montoya.
Oh.
There was something going on in the race, and about the points going on and listing the race of the top five drivers. And one of the analysts, Chris Spielman, asked where Montoya was in that. And Greasy said he wasn't there because he was out having a taco.
Wow.
Whoa.
Jeez.
So, I mean, the idea that race and racism is not, it just lies so deep
It really does.
And I think the people who don't even consider themselves racist, and most people don't, and most people aren't, but it's just there are things that just bubble up because it's such a pervasive part of America that it's hard to kind of get away from.
And two things, Mark. I think that what we have in many cases with the election of Barack Obama, and there is this undertone in America. I see it even when I meet with my little group of friends on Saturday morning at this little cafe in East Baltimore. We sit there. There are people who come in, and there is this sense of resentment and backlash that really bubbles itself to the surface. And it's real. The other thing, I think when people think, you know, well, Anthony and Mark is in this business and here they're questioning the journalism ethics or standards of Fox News. Well, I find it fascinating when I watch Fox, and I watch Fox all the time, that the only African-American commentators they ever have on Fox, Mark, are conservative. Not only are they conservative, but they take straight aim at Barack Obama, the president of the United States. And, I mean, they don't have commentators on there any longer. The Professor Hill, I think was his name, from New York, was actually fired recently and was cheered. His firing was cheered at a stockholders meeting for Fox because he was considered a liberal. And when somebody stood up in the meeting and brought up that this professor was on Fox, one of the chairmen, not Ailes, but someone else said, well, you don't have to worry about him. We fired him earlier today and was cheered. There is such a bias. Juan Williams makes his living now going after African-American iconic left leaders. Now, I'm not saying they're not entitled to have an opinion. I think everyone's entitled to have an opinion. You have people
of all. And have it aired. Right.
That's right. You have people on both perspectives on this show all the time. I think it's fascinating when we hear one perspective constantly, and we call that unbiased, and we call that fair. And it's not.
It's not. I mean, you can have.
And it's racist. It really is racist.
You can have an opinion and still have an honest discussion with other
people
who don't agree. Yesterday, we had a discussion on the show that you were part of with people who were part of the Catholic Conference and Planned Parenthood talking about the issues surrounding choice and people who believe in choice and abortion and abortion rights and those who don't believe that abortion should be a right. And that was, no matter what I believe, and I'm very clear that I'm pro-choice, you know, that women should have the right to choose. But that doesn't mean you don't have an honest discussion to explore the issues in depth, which is what they will not do.
That's
nor allow
right.
to have happen on their networks. Let's go with that. What do you think, folks? 410-319-8888 about the media and where it's going and the strength of certain movements in America and what they say. Anthony McCarthy is here in the studio with me. I'm Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Mike.
I like to talk about why this right-wing scum is so powerful now. It's not just they have bad taste. It's not just that they invented the term Antichrist. Get real. I didn't make that up. They really call him the president Antichrist. This sounds like a bad joke, but this is not a joke. And I want to try and account for why this is becoming so powerful now. And I think politics is an expression of economics. The economic system of this country is broken. It's not going to get better, and we'd better figure out what to do about it. And the right wing, to defend it, is becoming strong and doing the things you're discussing. Of course it's racist. Of course it's fascist. But its purpose is to defend this rotten economic system. And we better understand that and develop a vision of how to advance this economic system because it's not getting better. They could try and defend it, but it ain't going away unless we push it away.
Anthony, might have a thought for
Well, I think that the caller is on to something, that really what Fox News and the extreme right are about is advancing their agenda, and they are on point. They are on point every day, and they have a cable network that gives them a foundation and a forum to do that. What the flip side of that is, and I think he's on to something also about the economics of this, that you know, they're defending a status quo that they are very comfortable with. I think it's almost laughable that Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and these very wealthy men often attack what they consider to be programs that go to poor people, programs that go to undereducated people. It's laugh or really a bash of public option when they have the best insurance that money can buy. And people don't challenge that or in their mind, they're marching out and being part of rallies. They're marching out because you hit on something, Mark, in the last segment. They may not have huge listeners, but the small amount of listeners they have are loud and are zealots and are true believers. And I don't know if the left or even moderates have that kind of passion about what they believe. Vinny DeMarco seems to think so. He thinks that's why we don't have the media. They don't have the platform. And that's why we have to call Fox out, because it's not a fair or balanced perspective. It is one perspective.
And I go to the gym, and that's the only thing that plays is a gym.
Wow.
Almost every gym I've been to, when they had TVs up, Fox is what's played on the.
Well, needless to say, I don't go to gyms, but I will tell you that when I go to the grocery store, Mark, when I go to the grocery store, which is where, of course, you can find me, Mark, they're playing right wing talk radio on the radio, on the intercom system, which tells you about where the managers are making those decisions. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Let's go to the phones here. 410-319-8888 and Obasi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, you know, CNN, Fox, all these media outlets are controlled by these rich corporate white businessmen, the same one who controls the government. So how can we expect a biased approach when, you know, all these people are in cahoots, these Democrats and Republicans, all of these people are in cahoots with these media outlets? So how can us as minorities and poor people expect a biased approach? I mean, expect an unbiased approach. It's crazy. I mean, it's the same way that how can we expect Democrats and Republicans to solve our problems? Different branches, same tree. We need to be independent. UPP, www.uppmaryland.org.
Thank you, Obasi. I mean, I think that if you look at the news, it's not being covered. I mean, there was a piece I sent around, some people were trying to get this guy on now. In the next week, the British ambassador to Uzbekistan, who came out with this story that none of the mainstream media really is picking up in a major way. And the story was why he had to resign as ambassador was because he called out the human rights violations in Uzbekistan, where people were being boiled alive, prisoners being sent to Uzbekistan, rendered by Americans
by
and the British.
Americans and British.
British sent there, weren't even Uzbekis, tortured and killed because they said they were al-Qaeda suspects and many were not. And when he told the British equivalent of Secretary of State said, you're putting human rights in front of our commercial interests. The CIA head told him, don't worry about it. It's okay. We don't mind this kind of torture because it's part of our war on terror. But nobody covered the story. And this was an ambassador.
And we're that goes right to the point of credibility. It goes right to but Mark, the mainstream media, quote unquote, is not covering this issue.
Let's see what our listeners say. I do want to play this other clip that we have from another thing that's not being covered, which are the thousands of people demonstrating in Chicago at the American Bankers Association. It was on Democracy Now, which this station plays. We'll play a clip from that in a minute. But 410-319-8888. Let's get a couple of callers in a row here. And Alicia, you're on the air.
Good evening, guys.
Hi, Alicia.
Okay, so here's the issue. When the general population turns on what they expect to be the news, they have an expectation that they're getting information from journalists. And for the most part, the media has evolved into kind of magazine-type shows, and I think that's the road that Fox is going down. I look at their format, and it's not really news information. It's more of a magazine-type format, which allows them to editorialize all over the place. So the sadness is that when you turn on, you think that when you turn on ABC or NBC or CBS and CNN and Fox, that you're seeing something that is supposed to be the same thing, but it's evolved into the media product instead of real hard news. And the first rule of journalism is to not be the story.
Exactly.
Everybody on Fox is a story. Everybody on Fox has something to sell.
Well, because it's not news. It's all talk shows with a point of view. They're pushing a certain point of view. It's not kind of – Anthony, go ahead.
No, I think, Mark, what we've seen is that very popular, and Alicia has hit on something. We've seen this very popular extremist talk radio format transferred to television. And that's why they have the sets that are built the way they are. Glenn Beck has brought an audience in for his show. He has props like the red phone from the White House where he wants them to call every time he says something wrong. And it's not journalism. And I make it very clear, I'm not a journalist. I'm a talk show host. If anything, I'm a radio personality. But I think that we hold ourselves to a standard of fair and objective presenting of information. And that's not what's happening at Fox. That's not what's happening on this extreme. And we don't see the same thing on the left, to be honest with you. But we definitely see it when it comes to the right, that extreme, hateful, driven commentary.
And they won the ratings war.
And they do, and they win every time.
2.5 million people. CNN is now at the bottom.
Wow.
That
tells you something.
Of that mix. I'm looking where I fall. Yeah, CNN has fallen to the very bottom. Fox News has 2,234,000 primetime viewers. CNN averaged 679,000. Mm. And MSNBC, Fox won among 25 to 54 year old viewers, while CNN only had 142,000, Fox had 344, and MSNBC only had 131. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts on this? And Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. How you doing?
Well, welcome.
Good. I'm not quite following what Fox does is racist. I don't think that they're fair or balanced, and that's just a tagline they use to get customers in. But it's a free marketplace, and what I see is the product they sell easier to sell, better selling than CNN or ABC or NBC. But when I hear your guests using the words like they're hateful or they're extremist, I don't see that. And the matter of color, whether you know they're black commentators or not, it seems like a smokescreen. In that, yeah, I think Fox is going to try and strike deep into the heart of the Obama administration because that's fodder for their audience. But that's not racist. No more than CNN or ABC would be carrying water for Obama right now, or the Clintons, or anything like that. It just that you have. I don't even see it as a problem of color in this country. It's a left versus right.
I agree with you that it's the left versus right, but when you have – you don't see this on CNN or you don't see it on MSNBC. When you have Glenn Beck calling the president a racist and says he hates white people, you don't think that's racist?
Well,
Or when you have Hannity go on and on about Gates and his thoughts on Malcolm X and laughing about – you don't think that that's racist? You don't see that on the other networks.
Let's play this quick clip, the NAACP clip from Fox News. It takes about a minute. You'll hear this and see what you think. And this is what I call touching kind of the subtleness of racism that is held by some people in this country. Let's play this.
Now, the president was elected last November in part on the promise to heal the racial divide. We were told that this was a watershed moment for race relations in the United States. But recently, the president and his party have, in different ways, demonstrated that they're not above using race to advance their left-wing agenda. Last night, President Obama spoke to the NAACP and channeled his best Jeremiah Wright accent.
If John Lewis could brave billy clubs across the bridge, then I know young people today can do their part to lift up our community. If Emmett Till's uncle, Mose Wright, could summon the courage to testify against the man who killed his nephew, I know we can be better fathers and better brothers and better mothers and sisters in our own families.
Now, why does the first African-American president feel the need to affect an accent that he clearly does not possess? Or is that the way people speak in Honolulu? It's a cheap attempt to pander to an audience that already supports him.
What I'm saying here to and Dave, our caller, and to Anthony, if that didn't smack of racism,
yeah,
then what does?
Dave,
you there, Dave?
I don't see that as racist.
You don't see that as racist? Okay,
all right. Then we just have a different perspective.
That's fine. Yeah. You don't have to see it that way. But I mean, when I think that you play, when people play on, you know, it's like when you hear white people kind of use a black accent in a mocking way. She was playing on that on that kind of fear and that kind of anxiety among some white people. That kind of the way some people look at it. It's the same way you hear some black folks who mock the way white people talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it, and that's what she was playing with there. And I think that, to me, and I respect you don't think that it was a racist, Dave, but I think it was.
But racist.
Go ahead.
When you say racist, I think of someone who thinks their race is racially superior. Now, you're getting to the gray area where you're having people make fun of someone else, in this case, the president, because of an accent he uses. But that's really in the gray area, and then tossing around words like extremist or hateful. I don't see it as hateful. Maybe they're playing to their audience. Maybe they're trying to sell more commercials. Sure.
All right.
But maybe that's lowbrow, but not hateful. And it just doesn't. I'm not seeing the connection there.
All right. Well, I mean, I think that the connection is, I think, playing on the kind of subtle racist feelings we have in this country that bubble things up. And I think they play on that very well, and they maneuver that very well. But that's fine. I think that's I'm glad you called in and raised your issues. 410-319-8888 is number here. Let's go to Darius in your car.
Hello.
Hi, Darius.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Welcome.
So I was thinking while I was listening to the show that you were talking earlier about the right-wing media icons like Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and their cronies. And how they are kind of the higher income bracket, pretty wealthy compared with a lot of the folks who've kind of bought into their rhetoric and are going out and actually hitting the streets and as far as I'm concerned, making fools of themselves. And I think those folks who are going out there and kind of regurgitating the rhetoric would think twice about what they're doing if they realize that maybe those guys are really laughing at them as they're going out and doing it, because racism is such a tool to maintain a distribution or an imbalance in wealth when you really think about it. And it's not as much about race as it is, you know, the folks who are in control, keeping control by pitting the rest of us against one another. And I'd be interested to hear what you guys think about that.
Well, I think one of the classic strain in America that lashes out in anger over class and over the power of bankers, which we didn't get a chance to play this clip, but I'm really upset about, because I really want to talk about this with you all, but we'll do it another day, is that it is populism. And populism always gets divided by race. And Lou Dobbs is a classic populist dividing this country in race when it comes to immigration. I think that's the game that's played in America, and that's how we play it all the time. That's how we divide people who have similar interests, is over the issues of race. So that happens all the time in this country.
And Mark, on not just issues of race, but there are dynamics that play out around issues that we've seen and we've talked about on this program around same-sex marriage and the building of coalitions with right-wing leadership and the African-American leaders, where there is no issue, where there is a political alliance that brings these parties together, except when you start saying, well, come over here and become part of our coalition because we support this or we're opposed to this and we know you believe in this. And when you go through the laundry list of issues that we face, whether it's economic issues, the stimulus package onto unemployment, you will not find one thing that brings these groups together. But when it comes, in matter of fact, groups that share a table will argue about affirmative action, but are able to put those differences aside to build a coalition against another group that they have a difference with. And I find that we have become, both blacks, whites, the political class in general, have become masters at using those wedge issues to really feed this subtle racism that we see that plays itself out in America every day. And unfortunately, in this business, we see it play out when we're watching cable television, when we're listening to talk radio, racism plays. I sit in sometime on another station, WCBM, and I am amazed at some of the things those callers say, Mark. it amazes me. I sometimes think they must not know I'm African-American because they really – and I don't want to make assumptions
because
I'm African-American, I have a certain political agenda. But I am amazed at the race baiting and racial things that are said on talk radio.
No, I look, there is a racist underbelly to this country that is just there, and we just got to deal with it, and it's always going to be there. I don't think it's going to go away for generations to come. And it's being played upon right now, and I think the part of the fears here that the media like Fox is doing is that they have this – that's who they touch, and they touch – they're going after that muddied middle that can go either way sometimes, and that's who they preach to. And that's kind of this. Let's see, but this is the thing, 410-319-8888 before we take a break here. And I think we just talked to Darius, did we not? So we'll go to who's next up. I think Gary, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having this program. I listened to the gentleman just a little while ago who talked about that Fox News might be a little bit lowbrow but acceptable. They are totally unacceptable. I actually used to work there as a handyman.
Oh, really?
Part time. And I remember talking to these people in the lunchroom, periodically, and I'd ask if it might be appropriate to do this story or that story. And next thing I knew, I was fired.
Really?
And one of my really good friends worked there as in charge of operations, And that is just a little personal story about Sinclair Group and that organization and minutia, and I would venture to say in general. And basically what they are an arm of the Republican Party, the extreme right wing of the Republican Party. And I hardly know what else to say except that...
And you say you were fired, you're not on air, you were just a handyman who fixed these things up and you let your views be known and were fired?
I picked up the trash, I did it part-time, I just picked up trash around the building and the grounds once a week, and I fixed things. I would change the light bulbs and take, paper to the copying machines and stuff like that. But, look, you better walk lockstep with those folks or, you're out the door. And, I just wanted to just kind of throw it out there. It's a real, small story, but things get lost sometimes in the details, and sometimes the details are very, very important. So I'll leave it at that, and I'll leave it to your next caller.
Thank you so much. Good to hear from you, Gary. Before we go to break, let's go to 410-319-8888. And Mosey, your comments.
Hello.
Hi, Mosey. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for the show, and you bring very important issues with the Fox News. The answer, of course, is racist chat. Worldwide, the whole world now, not in America, but the whole world now, Fox News and Sky News, both of them, and somebody like Rush Lombard, those people are racist. So if they got them way, we probably will not be here today in this world, you know what I mean?
Mosey, thanks for your thoughts, too. I appreciate you being part of the show. And we're going to get a very brief break and come right back. Anthony McCarthy and I will, and take more of your calls at 410-319-8888. We'll see where the discussion takes us next. We may go to the World Series. We may go into the thousands in the streets of Chicago taking on America's bankers. We'll see what happens when we get back. If you don't know, we're not sure. We'll see who calls in. But stay with us. Don't go away. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 7 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at mecu.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here with Anthony McCarthy today. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part and Urbanite Radio stories on the Mark Steiner Show are made possible by Baltimore Mediation, the first mediation firm in the state of Maryland specializing in separation and divorce and business and workplace conflicts, located here in Baltimore. Go to www.baltimoremediation.com. And Anthony McCarthy are here with you. We're bringing an old friend on who has not been on the show in a long time, so it's a pleasure to hear his voice on this show again, John Feinstein, who is author of too many books to even mention, or we'd be here all day just talking about that. His latest book is entitled Change Up, Mystery at the World Series, which we'll talk about that and the World Series. And John, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Mark, it's good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
It's been a long while, man. It's great to hear your voice. And I'm here with my partner in crime, who joins us from at least a couple times a week, Anthony McCarthy, who's on the air with us as well.
Great to be with you again,
John. How are you?
So, you've got another book out. This is great.
Well, this has actually been a lot of fun because this is the fourth in a series of kids' mysteries, really targeted at kids 6th, 7th, 8th grade and up, although a lot of adults have told me they've read the books and enjoyed them because they're fast reads and they're set in venues that are very familiar to sports fans. The first one, Last Shot, was set at the Super Bowl. I'm almost awake today. At the Final Four. It's been a long day, Mark. Vanishing
right,
Act was set at the U.S. Open Tennis. Cover-Up was set at the Super Bowl. And as you mentioned, Change-Up set at the World Series. And what's been fun about these books is that my two kids, who are now 15 and 12, have been active participants from the beginning. My son Danny has really been my editor, giving me the eye of the target audience, telling me when I'm a dork because I don't know how kids talk to one another. In this particular book, there are two main characters. They were 13 when the series started. They're 14 now. A teenage boy named Steve Thomas, a teenage girl named Susan Carol Anderson, who's actually based on my very first editor in college, a minister's daughter from Oldsmar, North Carolina. And they're both huge sports fans and kind of budding, aspiring sports writers. And in Last Shot, they win a writing contest, one that actually exists, get to go to the Final Four where they stumble across this plot to fix the national championship game. And that sort of sets their friendship in motion. And in this book, they're at the World Series. We know that it's fiction on page one because the Washington Nationals are playing in the World Series. And a pitcher comes out of nowhere, which, as we all know, happens in postseason play sometimes, and pitches a great game. And they think this is like The Rookie, the Disney movie, except they find something in this guy's background that leads them to believe it's not quite as wonderful a tale as it seems to be. And in the course of investigating this, they run up against the question we all run up against in the media today. What's public? What's private? When is it something that's part of your private life? When is it something that belongs in the public domain? So I tried to sort of add that twist to this particular plot. And my daughter Bridget has now started reading the books. And throughout the books, people have always expressed amazement at how much Susan Carroll knows about sports or a girl. And my daughter said to me, "You know, Dad, I know in your day," as she puts it, girls didn't know that much about sports and weren't that into sports. But these days, we're all into sports. I mean, Bridget plays golf and tennis and swims and plays volleyball, and she made a great point. She's absolutely right. So I changed the book to reflect that. So that's made the whole series a lot of fun, having the kids be part of it.
You know, John, this is Anthony McCarthy again. One of the things I really enjoyed about the notes I read about the first parts of the series and then, of course, the wonderful book that we reviewed as we were preparing for our interview with you was the excitement and energy that these young budding reporters bring to their craft. Digging in those lines of ethics that they, those challenges of their ethics and journalism, their standards in journalism, that I think, although written as part of a young people series, really, I can see where adults who are watching the media wars play out all over cable television and regular and mainstream television can really connect with the honesty, the integrity that these two young people bring to their love of sports.
Well, Anthony, I appreciate your saying that. And you know, I think in a lot of ways, what I'm trying to do here is sort of reflect what it was like for me when I was a young journalist many, many, many years ago, and how fortunate I was to start at the Washington Post and to work with Bob Woodward and to work with David Marinus and to work, believe it or not, with Tony Kornheiser and, and people like that who taught me to respect what I was, the craft. And I know times have changed. I know people think newspapers are on the way out. It's a scary time to be a young journalist, to be, you know, if you're Stevie Thomas or Susan Carol Anderson and you're 14, you have to wonder exactly what kind of world you'll be in as young journalists when you graduate from college at this point. And I talk to kids who are college students all the time about that because, you know, we do have the internet and we do have blogs and we, you know, the newspaper business has obviously suffered. But I still believe, maybe I'm naive or maybe I'm just old. Well, we know I'm old.
But you're old, but what am I? My God. Look,
but it's all relative, Mark. But that there's a place for really good journalism. I mean, if you just look at the stories Bob Woodward's written out of Afghanistan in the last few months, I mean, that's an example of it. And I still think there is good journalism being practiced in many places around the country. And I want these two kids to aspire to that sort of thing. And with Anthony, without being preachy, I also want to try, and I've got a lot of notes from parents who say they appreciate this, to maybe in each book teach the kids a different kind of lesson. You know, I don't want to lecture them. I don't want them to be rolling their eyes when they read the books. I want them to say, hey, this is a great story. I'm really enjoying it. One reviewer called these books Sports Illustrated meets the Hardy Boys. Which I love because that's about what I read as a kid, Sports Illustrated and the Hardy Boys. And I've had, you know, parents of boys write to me and say, you know, my son loves sports. He doesn't love to read, but this is a book he will actually read. And I've had parents of girls and girls themselves. I get more letters from teenage girls on these books than anything I've ever gotten.
That's really good.
In my life, saying, we're so happy that you've written about a teenage girl who is a good athlete, because Susan Carroll's a very good swimmer.
Great character.
And I love her. And you know, she's smart and she's funny and she's a really good reporter. And girls who aspire to any of that really like the character.
Now, but do you one of the things that comes out in this book also is your kind of disdain for
a lot of people,
but for TV news in particular.
Yeah, you know what? I've been friends with a lot of people in television and through the years, but I have had either the good luck or the bad luck, depending on your point of view, to be involved in television. I've worked at times for ESPN. I've worked at times for CBS. I do some work now for Golf Channel. And I've got to be honest with you, Mark, it's light as a feather. Most of the time, there are exceptions. Obviously, the people on 60 Minutes for years and years have done great work. And there has been great work done in television journalism through the years. But most of what I come up against when I'm out at working at my job are the guys, you know, as we call them, the hairdos, who's, you know, first question is, great job tonight, coach. Tell us how you did it. And that might be after a loss. Most of the TV characters or the scenes in this book and in the other books that show up are based on real things that have happened that I've witnessed or unfortunately been a part of. There's a scene in this book in the Red Sox locker room after one of the World Series games. Excuse me, in the Nationals locker room. It's in Boston, but it's in the Nationals locker room where a TV guy just kind of bursts in with a camera. You know, when a guy is in the middle of being kind of reflective about something and asks an answer, as TV people tend to do, and there's a near fight between the print guy and the TV guy because the print guy is trying to get something done and the TV guy really doesn't care. Well, that's an actual scene from my life. So, you're probably right about that, Mark.
Go ahead,
Dan. John, can I ask you, you know, although, as we've said from the beginning, this book, obviously, part of a series targeted at young adults.
Right.
But the character, Doyle.
Norbert Doyle.
Very complicated. And I found it fascinating as we read through just how, like you said, there is this line that we who work in this business, and those of us, I've worked in politics before, and I've yelled at reporters about certain things being private. You know, I'm a private citizen, but I work in a public arena.
Right.
But I think that you really developed an extraordinarily complicated character there who went through tragedy. And I don't want to give away the story, but really, I think that it was amazing as these two young reporters navigated and asked those questions about what should be made public, what people are entitled to hold secret in their past. It was fascinating how complicated this picture was.
Well, thank you. And I really think that the point I was trying to make is that we live in a world where everything seems black and white and all the answers seem clear. And they're not. And I think that it's something that, you know, back in the old days, or as Bridget would say, in my day, the reporters who traveled with athletes, you know, it was like Vegas. What you heard, what you saw, stayed there. And, you know, you look back now on Mickey Mantle as a prime example of that kind of thing. All the reporters who covered the Yankees in the 50s and 60s knew Mantle was drunk every night and showed up at the ballpark every day with a hangover.
Mm-hmm.
But he was still productive. So the question is, was that a story? The answer back then was no. My guess is if Mickey Mantle was playing baseball today and living the life that he led back then today, that somebody sooner or later would write about it, you know, be on somebody's blog.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, he'd be seen, somebody would take a picture of him with a cell phone camera in a bar. Or it would be the subject of speculation on a sports talk radio show. I mean, we all know how that is. And the point that I'm trying to make with Norbert Doyle is that people do, you know, we all go through difficulties in our life. For example, a cell phone ringing when you're on a radio show. And you know, what is private and what is public? And the two young reporters and their two mentors in journalism wrestle with this, even as Norbert Doyle himself
wrestling
with it.
But you've been a sports writer for a long time. When did it change? Because I remember every now and then when you watch cable sports stations, as much as they are covering the craft and the sport, they're talking about contract negotiations. They're talking about all kind of behind the scenes, below the
radar
issues, as if it is commentary and news along with the coverage of whether we're watching football, whether we're watching soccer, whether we're watching the Lakers and Kobe Bryant. We know more about their personal lives, and the commentators are actually talking about their personal lives as opposed to the craft. And not everyone, obviously, but there is a change. Is it our interest has changed?
Yeah, there's been a sea change, and I think there are three major things that happened, not just in sports, but also in news. But let's start with sports, that completely changed the way we cover, we being sports writers, athletes, and sports. ESPN, 24 hours. They had to fill 24 hours a day of sports.
Mm-hmm.
At that same time, USA Today came into existence and started doing things like having polls of the top 25 high school teams in the country. Nobody ever covered high school sports outside of their own locale until then. We living in Washington had no idea how good a team was in Arcadia, California, until that came along. And then the third thing, well, there are actually four now. The third thing was sports talk radio, 24 hours a day to just talk about sports. On and on and on to the point where, you know, sometimes I literally find myself listening to a sports talk radio station and I go, what am I doing? I don't need to hear Joe Fan say for the 38th time today that Jim Zorn can't coach.
That's right.
And then the fourth thing, of course, is the internet, which has completely changed the world. Forget sports. It's completely changed the world. So all of that and this starvation for wanting to know anything and everything we can about our heroes and our villains. You know, CNN, you know, and then came CNBC and MSNBC and God help us all, Fox News. And that changed the world of politics. So it's just that there's this, you have to feed the beast 24 hours a day. There's no such thing as a first edition newspaper deadline anymore. You have a story, you get it up on the internet as quickly as possible. It's all different.
A couple of things here. I mean, what, one, I'm curious about the direction you're going to go in with your writing, and then I'm got to ask you a question about the Real Life World Series coming up, because tomorrow is the night.
Well, we know that the Nationals are not in the Real Life World.
Are they not?
No, believe it or not. They only missed by 46 games, I think.
Talk about headline news.
I'm so upset now. I was going to talk about the Nationals and the Yankees.
Yeah. Well, if it's ever the Nationals and the Orioles, we're really happy.
Oh, the Orioles. We won't talk about the Orioles tonight. But this series is going to continue? I mean, you're really into this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, as long as they let me continue to write them, I will. I'm now at the point where I have to start making decisions about how do I grow the kids? Because you can't just keep them 13 forever. I guess Frank and Joe Hardy were 18 and 16 forever, but you can't do that in 2009, 2010. I've advanced them to being 14. They've had their first kiss. So I have to deal with that issue of them growing up, as I'm writing. But there are plenty of venues I can still take them to. The next one's going to be set at the Army Navy game, which I'm really looking forward to because you know my affection for that game.
You love
it. Love everything about it.
Right.
I still haven't done one in golf. I'd love to do one where Tiger Woods gets kidnapped and isn't found. but yes, Mark, as long as they let me continue to write them, I will continue to do so.
I really do love them. I think that it would be fun just to get you on the air with some other kind of people who write fiction for sports for kids would be a
you know,
kind of
it's not a long, it's become a longer list in recent years.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started this, one of the reasons I started this 4 years ago was a friend of mine said to me, you know, you're always telling stories about your kids. You love sports. There really aren't that many books out there in the sports mystery genre. So I wrote Last Shot. It made a New York Times bestseller list. It won the Edgar Allan Poe Award for mystery writing, which I never thought I'd ever be associated with Edgar Allan Poe, except maybe hanging out with the Ravens mascot. and I thought, oh, great. You know, I've got a wide open lane here. And Mike Lupica's writing them every 15 minutes. Tim Green is writing them. Carl Hyacin is writing them. So it's become all of a sudden a very competitive marketplace for some reason.
That's, I mean, you were just, it's fun to watch you move into a different genre than the stuff you've.
It's been fun for me. It's been a different kind of challenge. And as I said, with the kids involved, that makes it that much more fun. And obviously, they feel they're part of it, which is, you know, thrilling for me.
But before we go, I've got to ask this question. Here we have the 105th edition of the World Series coming up just in a day. The Yankees and their 40th. Run here,
right.
and could have a 27th World Series title if they win. But I'm going to throw this out with all the money they spend, all the money. What is it, $425 million in salaries the Yankees are
right
are
over
spending.
The next many years? Right.
Absurd madness. Well, we can get there if we have time. But I'm going to say, go out on a limb here, the Phillies in seven.
Well, I'm going to really go out on a limb, Mark, and say it's going to be cold.
Gosh.
But I think we're looking at a long series. I mean, we're going to be playing in November. We already know that for sure. Thank you, Major League
Baseball. Gosh, you guys are really stepping out there.
Yeah, that's me. I'm always out on a limb. My last correct prognostication was Nixon over McGovern. So that's how good I am. But I think we're looking very possibly at a seven-game series. We haven't had a seven-game series, believe it or not, since 2002. And since they put in that silly rule where the winner of the All-Star game gets the sixth and seventh games,
the
home field advantage, it hasn't come into play because we haven't had a seventh game since then. And I think this year is the year we're going to see a seventh game. It will be in Yankee Stadium. And if it's Cliff Lee versus CeCe Sabathia, that would make for just great drama. And I frankly, Sabathia is a little younger, a little stronger. I would give a slight edge to the Yankees. But I if the Phillies won, I wouldn't be surprised. And having grown up a Mets fan, I would be delighted.
Yeah, I have something about wanting to see the Phillies win this one. Even though I grew up here in the Orioles, I've always had this thing for the National League. I don't know why. It's always, maybe it's because I was a young kid who loved the Dodgers and cried when they left Brooklyn. But
the Dodgers left Brooklyn? That was my next book.
No, I'm sorry. No, they've gone now. They left.
Oh.
You know?
My dad never got over the Dodgers leaving Brooklyn. Literally never went back to baseball.
Wow.
Just abandoned it completely.
I mean, the bums.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was a tough thing. But, I mean, but watching this particular series, this is going to be, I mean, the Yankees have really kind of pushed up. I mean, they've got, Phillies have a better home running hitting team. This is going to be a pitcher's duel in a lot of ways. This is going
to
be.
Well, there are always certain things to watch. Because, you know, we always expect what's going to happen with Sabathia and Lee. And yet the things that I look at is, how's Pedro Martinez going to pitch?
Uh-huh.
How is A.J. Burnett, who's been very inconsistent, going to pitch? Who's middle relief's going to be better? Because middle relief is always key in postseason, because you guys don't pitch complete games in postseason. Now, the Yankees have Rivera on the back end, and if they get to Rivera, they're going to win most of the time. So, you know, and Brad Lidge has pitched well in postseason, had a terrible regular season. So we don't know with him. The other thing that I think is the story to watch is everybody's talking about how Alex Rodriguez finally has had a great postseason, which
he
no doubt
incredible.
Has. This is his first World Series. How does he handle that pressure that he's never been through before? Does he keep going, keep doing what he's doing, and finally be a hero, and everybody will forget that he ever took steroids in New York?
Mm-hmm.
Or does he revert to the way he played in postseason in 04, 05, 06, and 07? We'll see.
And Jeter hasn't done bad. He's 9 runs.
Oh, Jeter's unbelievable. The one thing is, as I said, I'm a lifelong Mets fan. But if you are a baseball fan, you cannot not respect Jeter, Rivera, Posada. And I put Pettit one rung below because of the steroid use, but he has been a brilliant competitor for many, many, many years. Those four guys have been the heart and soul of these Yankees teams dating back to the mid-90s. And what's interesting, when you talk about all the money they've spent on free agents,
yeah,
those guys are still the heart and soul of the team. And the reason they are, and I'm not kidding about this, is because George Steinbrenner was suspended from baseball in 1992, and Gene Michael refused to trade those guys when they were up-and-coming prospects because they all came through the Yankee organization. And if Steinbrenner had been running the team, they all would have been Ken Phelps and would have been traded. they all would have been Jay Buhner and would have been traded to Seattle for Ken Phelps.
I think you might be right.
No, I believe I am. I'm not saying that as a joke. And so with all this talk about the money they spent on Sabathia and Burnett and Mark Teixeira, who's a great player, the heart and soul are still those four guys. And, by the way, their best signing in the wintertime, or not their best because Sabathia and Teixeira were very good signings, but the decision to re-sign Pettit looks brilliant right now the way he's pitched.
Now, he's an amazing player, and I'm waiting to see if Worth for the Phillies is going to pick up.
Well, you know, he's a streak hitter, and you never know. He could go 0 for 12. He could go 6 for 12. And the same's true of Ryan Howard, who's played very well in postseason the last 2 years. But they have depth in that lineup. Somebody's going to hit in that lineup. Whereas I think the Yankee lineup is more capable of going cold, because when you get towards the bottom of the lineup, you've got some guys who have power but don't hit for average. And when you look at a guy like Nick Swisher, who hit 29 home runs, I'm going to bet that most of those home runs were not against pitchers the quality of Cliff Lee or Pedro Martinez or Cole Hamels.
John, I wish we had more time. I've got to wrap it up. We're at just the end of the hour. John Feinstein, please don't be a stranger. Great to talk to you again.
Congratulations on Change Up.
Thanks. It's great to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me, Mark. Always good to talk to you. Thanks, Anthony.
Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye.
John Feinstein was with us. Great sports writer, author of over 20 books. He's been on the show many times. And please read this book, Change Up, and bring it to your kids. You'll enjoy it. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Anthony McCarthy, thanks so much for being with me today.
Great, Mark.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producer is Justin Levy. We're engineered today by Brian Boone. Interns Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Devin Finley. Judith Lloyd standing in alone tonight and doing all those clips for us. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.